podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Talk Screamers Podcast. My name is Simo. Today, I'm joined by Billy. Say hello, Billy.
Hello, mate. You all right?
I'm all right. Say hello, Jed.
All right, mate.
We are missing Jakey Boy, as usual. He's out somewhere accomplishing some task, I'm sure.
Scranning,
yeah. gathering Scran to bring back to his domain. we're gonna start on the agenda. We have Everton versus Arsenal, a very tasty fixture. Looking forward to the return of Patriot Saint of the Talk Screamers podcast, Sean Dyche, returned in all his glory. Got the win over top of the table, Arsenal. Jed, I will come to you, mate. Give us your thoughts on the affair.
Well, first of all, can I just say, for what feels like the first time in forever, the Screamers have predicted something and it's come true. Because we were talking, last time we were on, we were talking about Dyche to Everton. We're saying it has to happen and it actually happened. I can't believe it. I really can't believe it. I'm over the moon.
To be honest with you, the thing that I can't believe is someone at Everton saw sense.
That's what I was going to say. It's quite what, like, quite obviously the right decision, but you don't back them to make it.
They
flew out Marcelo Bielsa, which would have been an absolute disaster. An absolute fucking disaster.
It would have been entertaining, man.
It would have been entertaining. It'd have been like...
Yeah.
You know,
do you know what? I've got a feeling that Bielsa would have kept them up, though. Just through sheer craziness, he would have kept them up. I have a feeling that he's got this thing about him, hasn't he, that people would just buy into. He'd get them running, wouldn't he?
But again, just how many training sessions does Dominic Calvert-Lewin survive under Bielsa? Yeah. I reckon about 35 minutes
Davis
of the first training session.
Bielsa ball. It's just not going to happen, is it? I think you put in the chat, didn't you, Simo, that I think there's three players in that Everton squad that can play Bielsa ball, and Pickford's one of them.
It's true, though. It's true. So they've went with the clear right appointment, and they've started pretty much as a, like, the players for this, and I think I put it in the chat, this is the shape that Lampard should have been playing literally from the get-go of this season. As soon as he encountered any sort of injury crisis, this is how we should have set up. And he was determined to make this sort of back three and kind of play a wee bit like a sort of fluid counter-attack and sort of that never was anywhere near it. Just basically relying on Iwobi to be everywhere. But after the first 20 minutes, Sean Dyche sees that McNeil and Iwobi are far too disconnected from Dominic Calvert-Lewin. They mentioned this on Sky. So they switch both sides. McNeil came on to the left, Iwobi out to the right. Both of them are a bit more comfortable. Moves them up the pitch. And they do the simple things well. They go right all the way back to basics. They surrender the wide areas to Arsenal because they know they've got the height in the box. All the fullbacks, the centre backs are very tall. They know they've got the height in the box to defend their own area from wide areas. And basically they congest the middle. And Arsenal, although there was a few chances, Arsenal just couldn't really find a way through. And I suppose if you put a solid defence in front of a decent shortstopper like Jordan Pickford, and also he has a decent shortstopper, especially from range, he is one of the better keepers in the league when it comes to defending in that sort of way. And they found success immediately, but it wasn't an overly complicated game, you know? Even the chances they created were so simple. You know, try and hit the striker early. Try hitting my first-time pass. Try hitting my second touch. Something like that, you know? Dominic Calvert-Lewin stayed right between the sticks, exactly what he'd done under Carlo, which I'm surprised Lampard never asked that of him. He always wanted Dominic Calvert-Lewin, I felt, to come deep. It's just not his game. I don't think he offers really anything in the midfield when it comes deep, you know, and Dyche goes in and he asks him to do a simple job. Stay high up the pitch, get yourself between the sticks and make the run when it's there, you know.
I think you've seen the difference between Frank Lampard, who's still an inexperienced manager, really, and Sean Dyche, he's got, you know, the decades worth of experience behind him. Dyche knows what, he knows how to play in the Premier League. He knows how to defend a lead and you know, how to set a team up, basically, to play to its strengths, really. I think that
he's time in the Premier League.
Masterclass, wasn't it?
9 times out of 10, but probably 95 times out of 100. Right, Sean Dyche is turning up with a team that is not as talented as the opposition. The vast, vast majority of time of his Premier League career. That won't always be the case at Everton. There will be now times when he turns up and he's got a pool of players that is better than the opposition. But if anybody knows what it's like to come up against a superior side and just give them a difficult day, just make it, you know, like Odegaard was just nowhere near the amount of time he normally gets. They know, like, just little things like identifying how important a player Odegaard is, right? And just sticking Onana on him, you know? Just sticking him right next to him, standing on his toes.
I thought he was fantastic.
Oh, yeah, he was amazing.
He was unbelievable.
He was great defensively, and he was great on the break as well. He was exactly where he needed to be. He was winning the ball high up the pitch. He was... And basically, his defensive role was to just prevent Odegaard from playing the way he normally does, which he succeeded tremendously. And that doesn't always... Doesn't just mean like win the tackle. Sometimes it means, you know, stand on his toes, you know, barge into the back of him, foul him, let him know you're there.
Stroke his hair a little bit.
Feed him a carrot from your palm of your hand. No, as simplistic as a performance I think could be, just nothing really overly complicated about it.
It's the ideal new manager bounce, isn't it? But again, yeah. A tough game against the league leaders and at this point, champions elect, aren't they, in terms of the rest of the league. So to go out there and to keep them at bay and beat them, you know, and end that unbeaten run that they're on as well, it is the perfect first game for Everton and Sean Dyche. It's exactly what they would have been like hoping for. Basically.
I wish I was a betting man. I don't do any gambling ever, just because I have an addictive personality and I would quickly lose my house. But I did put in the streamers chat set piece goal to Everton, surely. And it was. And it was almost written in the stars it would be Dwight McNeil assisting James Tarkowski.
There's a few people that called it on Twitter, Burnley, I saw.
Yeah. Well, it's because it was the obvious, wasn't it? It was the obvious. Yeah. And it's like, it just shows how tall the Everton team is, that the corner taker is 6 foot and they don't really lose anything in the box.
I genuinely had no idea that McNeil was that tall, but it doesn't surprise me.
He's quite a tall lad. He's either 5'11 or 6 foot. Yeah, he's a tall lad.
Is he really?
Yeah. Jesus. Do you remember that part of the Burnley ball was to like lump it to McNeil and have him win it in the air? So
well, I thought it was because he was like reasonably quick.
He is reasonably quick.
I didn't realise he was so big though.
But you need more. You need more than that to get on the Dyche side, you know.
He's 183
Can't just be quick.
Centimeters.
You've got to be tall.
183 centimetres, which is dead on 6 foot.
6 foot, there you go. Yeah. There you go. No lies told. let's look at this from an Arsenal point of view. A little bit of fatigue, I think. A little bit of pressure. Especially, I don't think the noise around the transfer window really, really helped Arsenal. The outrage from the fans that... all players are on their phones, especially a younger team like Arsenal, like youngest team in the league. Yeah. You can guarantee they're all on Twitter. They're all on, you know, Instagram, stuff like that. They clearly see the outrage of the sort of, not, I wouldn't say the majority of Arsenal fans, but a loud, small majority about, you know, Arsenal's season being over and they don't want Jorginho and Trossard is a second choice, a third choice signing and stuff like that, you know, and... I don't think that helps these young guys.
I don't know. It's a double-edged sword because one of those people would be the same people saying, you know, oh, well, we haven't got enough depth if they don't go on and win the league. So for them to sign players like Jorginho and Trossard, it gives them depth.
Yeah,
it gives them a bench.
Exactly.
You know, like they're good players. They're proven Premier League players.
Trossard
won
the
title, hasn't he? So.
Right. Yeah, that Jorginho signing is a fantastic signing all parties involved. All parties. It was just a shame.
Maybe not all parties if he gets past Thomas in the time.
Blimey, Jeff.
Do you know what I thought
straight
about
straight into the afterwarders bag.
I thought about that and decided against it.
Simo,
I thought
know
about
why,
that and decided
you
against
know
it.
Simo, it's because you're a coward.
I'll concede that. I should have been brave enough.
I'm proud of that. I'm proud of that one.
You shouldn't be.
Bringing the podcast right to ship it. Carry on, Billy.
It was too perfect, mate. You said it all really nicely.
Yeah, I mean, it was typical. As soon as he came on and party went off, the game changed completely. And what was it, like 30 seconds later, they get the corner and...
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com. For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
They get the corner and score, which is another thing that I found quite weird, to be honest with you, because you don't make substitutions when you're defending a set piece.
No, you don't. You really don't.
Which is what Arsenal did. They took off a big man in Thomas Partey, and I mean, whether it was down to them that they conceded or not, you just don't make that substitution unless it was for an injury.
I don't know why they were looking around all those Everton monsters and being like, do you know who we need? Like, six stone, piss wet through Jorginho to come on here and help defend this set piece.
I bet Sean Dyche was licking.
He would have been licking his lips.
He literally was just, yeah. I bet he looked at his assistant and just went, it's time.
I don't think that was a particularly great decision. I mean, but the outrage around Jorginho, I mean, people just don't seem to rate him. Or Arsenal fans just don't seem to rate him at all.
No, I think part of that's just purely because he plays for Chelsea as well. You don't want a rivals player kind of thing.
I seen a tweet that said, if Arsenal win the league, it'll be in spite of Jorginho, not because of him.
He's not that bad a player. Like, I think
he's a great player. He's a fantastic player. No, let's have it right.
I don't think he's been at his best for Chelsea for a little while. But some of the things I've seen have said that he's he doesn't work hard enough and things like that. But it's not his game. He's a holding midfielder. He's there to break the play up, really, isn't he? And he can play as well. Like, he's got good feet.
Yeah.
He'll fit right into that Arsenal team.
He's a pass merchant. He was, under Sarri, yeah. I think he completed more passes than any player in the league.
I just don't see him as a game changer, though.
No, he's a facilitator.
That's the thing. Exactly.
Yeah, he's a facilitator of great players.
He should come on when you're 2 or 3 nil up, take Partey off or take Xhaka off, whichever one needs a rest that week, say, and he then comes on and does the same job, just pings it about, does what he needs to do. And that's what Arsenal need as well for the Europa League games. Because of the light squad, you're going to be having to play these players a lot. And this is why they needed both Trossard and Jorginho to give the wide players and the midfielders a rest.
He'll play in the Europa League, for example. He'll have an absolute storm of a game.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, oh yeah, what a signing.
Arteta's never wrong.
Yeah. It's crazy. This manager like brings a squad that has essentially how much this squad has grew in the past 2 years has been absolutely mad. In the past sort of this season, certainly Arteta's barely put a foot wrong, and he decides these are two players I want. He gets them, and then there's just outrage.
This is another thing I didn't understand. It's until he gives you a reason to to be a bit concerned. Just back him. Just step behind him. All right, you've got your opinion. Yeah, maybe he's not the flash signing that you wanted. He's not the 80 million Caicedo that you wanted. He's not the big money signing, but until he gives you a reason to be concerned, just back him.
It's also as well, it's not like they've gone out and signed like John Joe Shelby, for example.
No, exactly.
Like, no, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
They've gone and signed a very, very successful
Euro winning, Champions League, yeah. Premier League winning midfielder. Oh, shit.
I hate this man. Anyway, I don't understand about Meltdown, but I'm not in that sort of Arsenal sphere. I just kind of observing it from the outside.
That's a great word to call it as well.
It's own me bubble. Jorginho was whacking. I was like, he won the Euros 5 minutes ago. He was literally player of the tournament. You know what I mean?
It's very short memories. Yeah. Very short memories. It's because he wasn't involved in the World Cup. They completely forget about these things.
I don't know about it as about football fans, but it's as if the hard drive wipes every 6 months. You know, anything that happened before it is like anyhow, we'll move on to Arsenal's immediate contenders. Manchester City, who lost to Spurs
again
this evening, as I just watched. And it just seems like Man City can't get by Spurs. And they even asked Pep in the press conference and the post match. I can't explain it. obviously, they do everything right here, Spurs. Everything right to frustrate City, anyway. And City, you know, there's obviously some sort of... It can't be a happy camp. It doesn't feel like a happy camp. Joao Cancelo leaving, you know, a player who's been, you know, arguably one of the best fullbacks in world football for a few years now. Who can play... It's so versatile. He can play left-back, right-back. And you barely see any change. Centre mid. Well, basically where he operates when he's playing those sort of positions. And you basically see no drop-off in form, whatever side he's playing on. They have a player that universally like versatile. I don't see you actively try and get rid of a player like that. Even if not. And I don't see City's obviously, I think they've lost what, five away games this season. I don't see that as Joao Cancelo as the it's his fault, you know. And Kevin De Bruyne have been benched as well. That speaks to me like, right, okay, he's had to be a bit of a drop off in form. Maybe he's trying to just kind of get a tune out. I'm like, oh, you're not undroppable. You need to perform week in, week out, stuff like that. But they didn't look.
But Foden as quick as well. Foden as well. Being included. It's so strange the selection of the team selection, the tactics as well, just everything from on and off the pitch. It's just from an outsider's perspective anyway, it just feels very strange, and we can't give a reason for it. We don't know the ins and outs of Man City, but you can't allow, I just don't understand the reasoning behind letting someone like Cancelo leave. But for the reasons that he suggested, for all right, Rico Lewis has But he's been really good when he's played.
Been very good. He's not the finished product.
He's 18, you don't let Cancelo go. You can't let this Rico Lewis, or like I say, he's been all right when he's played, but he shouldn't be playing every game in the Premier League just yet. I mean, I understand the thing of if he's good enough, he's old enough, but you're leaving out Joao Cancelo, who, like we said, he's one of the best fullbacks in the world, one of the best players in the world, certainly one of the best footballers, if you like, in the world. It's just a really, really bizarre one. And I think
he's a player that genuinely improves any squad he joins in the world.
100%.
I think if he joins any team, I think that squad is then improved by having Joao Cancelo.
Absolutely.
So I don't know why City aren't a team that need to sell. Ever. They're pretty much state funded. No matter what the book says. They are. let's just have it right. So there's no sell to buy sort of policy at City. So this is a player that Pep is unhappy with. It must be something to do that's maybe run
bang. Do you know what I think Pep's, tensions Pep's, must be high. I think Pep has got a meltdown in him. personally. He's a passionate guy, isn't he? You know?
Yeah.
I watched that Man City documentary they did a few years ago, and like he is not afraid to absolutely lay into them. Mm. Yeah, and this is a, you know,
keep them humble.
A world class squad full of world class players who've cost an arm and a leg. Yeah, you know, and he will, you know. He will go at them like they're a pub team.
I mean, even Calvin Phillips comes back from England, and then he's in the Pep's immediately in the press conference like, he's fat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, he's a bit of a savage, isn't he?
Like, I don't know exactly word for what he said, but he pretty much said he's fat. I don't know what he's been doing in that training camp, but he is now fat and not fit to play. So I'm pretty upset with that.
I have a feeling that he's literally like, Pep might be the reason for this kind of like mutiny, essentially. I don't know whether you call it a mutiny, but it seems like if he's dropping Kevin De Bruyne and Kevin De Bruyne is not playing well, like there must be something going on there. And like potentially he may be losing the dressing room a bit.
Do you think he's just overthinking it?
Kevin De Bruyne has not been awful. And if
he has not been Kevin De Bruyne since.
No, he's not been. When Kevin De Bruyne is at it, he is the best.
Oh, yeah.
One of the best centre mids in world football. There's maybe a couple of contenders. Yeah. It's a different conversation.
Nobody can argue with that. But like in recent weeks, he has not performed very well. Like you've even got, you know, if he's leaving players like Phil Foden out, for example, as well, who's a top, top talent, and Julian Alvarez is playing ahead of him, and Alvarez really, yes, he's won the World Cup, but he's still very much...
He's virtually offered nothing today, by the way.
He had a couple of decent shots, but nothing apart from that, was it?
I'd argue he's still more of a prospect than anything else, Alvarez.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, like, yeah, for him to be getting in ahead of you know, these players, your Fodens and your De Bruyne's.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
Like, there's got to be something there that means Pep's not happy with them, and that I think they've all just fallen out with each other. It could be some, like, you know, like on Football Manager when you don't renew someone's contract and then all the other players start piping up like, oh, why haven't you renewed his contract? Like, it could be something like that, you know?
And you'd be like, yeah, because he's fucking 40 years old. Yeah. 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 Then everybody
like, downstairs. Yeah. No, literally, I
Scott
think
Carson, his contract's up soon. It's Scott Carson. They're fucking pissed off that he's leaving.
I think Scott Carson started him yet there. He's like, I'm sick of this bald fraud. He's in everybody's ear.
Carson's aggressively trying to engineer a move somewhere else. Yeah. He's been blocked by Pep. Up to Joe.
Like, you should play for Bayern, mate. I'll get an
ahead. I'm already learning German.
I don't know. I'm not entirely sure, but not completely happy.
I'd love to know.
But the service to Haaland has been non-existent, literally non-existent.
But that's because I think De Bruyne wasn't playing either. The amount of those little balls that De Bruyne plays in, we saw it against Wolves that they did that little combination thing, pass back to De Bruyne on the edge, he whips it in, Haaland taps it in with his head. You know, they do that so often, and when De Bruyne is not on the pitch, that's not there. So the service is instantly halved.
Yeah.
But I think Jamie Carragher said it, didn't he, post match? He said Haaland is at the wrong club for Erling Haaland, if you know what I mean. He's not a Man City player.
You've actually seen none of the qualities that Haaland possesses. You see very, very little of him. You see finishing, and that's it.
Harry Kane suits Man City so much more than Erling Haaland.
And like, Haaland would probably suit Spurs. He'd probably suit a Courtney side. Suit a Courtney side much better.
And I mean, that's what won Spurs the game at the end of the day. It was Harry Kane being a much better footballer rather than as well as being a finisher and having that clinical edge. He was a much better footballer, is a much better footballer than Haaland at the minute. And I just think Pep's maybe not using him to his optimal potential. We all know.
Like even in the Haaland's, first half, you see him constantly.
His goals he scored is just ridiculous. But
you see him constantly like setting up for runs.
Yeah, but no one's picking him out.
Setting up for a run. And it gets to like near the end of the first half, I just think he stops making runs. He stops making the effort because he's just like, what the fuck's the point? We need to take 20 touches. We need to get, you know, we need to take 5 minutes to build up this one attacking moment. And then the last ball fucking goes out of play, or it goes immediately on Eric Dyer's head, you know? And it's like, that was 5 minutes of build-up play wasted, you know? And he probably sees it that way because he's a striker and he's just like, can I just get it to feet? Can I just put me in an aerial duel? Let me do something. Put me in a foot race with Eric Dyer and I'll fucking leave him like 5 years. You know, put me in a position where I can exploit this back line. But whatever it is, he's just, at this point, he's a head on a stick. And I'm thinking, right, well, what does he do, right? Apart from he has exceptional finishing, I'll accept that. But what is he doing that another striker of his height, you know, that couldn't do, you know? I feel like at the start of the season, Man City were actively playing to Haaland's strengths. I mean, how many goals at the start of the season? If you look at Haaland's early goals, a lot of it is like overpowering centre-backs, running in behind, being super powerful and stuff like that.
Was it his first game against West Ham?
It was just
phenomenal. And they were really playing to his strengths. And I thought this season when they brought Haaland in, I thought that they were going to be a little more free-flowing. You know, Jack Grealish was going to be able to come in and properly create chances. And you could argue that they were sort of doing that at the beginning of the season, but it's all just fizzled out a little bit. And I mean, Haaland will still score hat-tricks like he did the other week against Wolves, because that's the player he is. He will score goals. He does score goals. He just scores goals. But he's not a Man City player. He's not that player he's not the optimal player for Pep Guardiola's system.
I think so.
had they have got Kane that summer instead of Grealish, or as well as had they have got Kane, they'd probably be winning the league by a canter at the minute.
Someone likened it to, I don't know if I've already mentioned this in a podcast, but someone likened it to, they look back at Pep's career and likened it to when he bought Zlatan Ibrahimovic at Barcelona to get the best out of Messi. And it just never worked. Later, I think he would go back and he would do like, I think he had Messi, Eto, and David Villa or something like that. That's where it ended up going. So obviously three similar players to, that's quite, if you actually think of it objectively, pretty similar to like City front three that you would have seen maybe in the past sort of 5 years, pre-Haaland.
Aguero, Mahrez, Sterling.
But, you know, three, you know, very technically good ball carriers and finishers, you know. It's different. It's a different looking Man City. It's not as sexy looking.
No, absolutely.
It's not as, you know, I mean, I know Sterling's not the best finisher in the world, but he did a lot for Man City. You know, the law played on both sides.
You can see it now when he's at Chelsea. He was bought young and they moulded him into the player that they need. He's not that good for Chelsea at the minute because he's a Man City. He's a perfect Man City player. He was always at the back stick when that ball was coming in. He was always there to tap the goals home. Mm-hmm. And that's what Raheem Sterling was at Man City, and that's what Raheem Sterling is as a footballer, because he's been there for so long and he's been moulded into that player. That's why he's not flourishing at Chelsea.
It feels like they're missing that core group of players that they've had for so long, like your Sterlings, David Silva, company, Fernandinho, you know, players like that. It feels like they're really, really missing them at the moment. You know, and you look like that team just doesn't feel the same. When you watch them,
they don't look the same.
It's like they're trying to be the same, and they're not. They're not capable of being the same, if that makes sense. So they've got to change, but Pep doesn't want to change. So it's weird. Like you said, Haaland, the way he plays, would, you know, they need to set up a different way to suit that and get the best out of him, and they're not. So
when you've got a striker like Haaland, you have to play to his strengths.
Well, they were at the beginning of the season, and I think they get criticised for turning over possession a little bit. You know, playing the high line, maybe conceding some goals and stuff like that. And then I think they are a wee bit worried about turning over possession. But see, to be honest, like, if you look at that Spurs side, they're a back five with two DMs sitting in front of them. You know, they're not bothered about fucking how many times they turn over possession. They're just looking for an opportunity and then they're out. You know, and as soon as they're out,
exactly,
you've got a 3-on-4 or a 3-on-3, you know, and then it's, you know, they find a way. And Kyle Walker even kind of spoke about it in the post-match, but it's kind of like, it's difficult because you don't want to overcommit and leave yourself vulnerable and stuff like that. And I'm thinking, if you're already thinking about that on the pitch, then Spurs have kind of got you where they want you. That's exactly what Spurs want the Man City players to be thinking when they go forward.
Absolutely.
You know?
Like Kyle Walker shouldn't necessarily be thinking like that either, because he's got the pace to be able to get back.
Yeah.
his pace bails him out of so much. He should commit himself. He's the one player in the Man City defence who should commit himself because he can get back.
Like, see Kane, Kulu, and
Son.
Son. They'd be rubbing their hands knowing that Man City players are going forward and looking over their shoulder because they're worried about a counter. I think they'd be loving that. Because it's confidence in it.
Yeah.
But we obviously don't have the answers for City. You know, did they change the entire philosophy to suit one player? Maybe if that's going to be. But I think there was a stat that said that they've not actually scored, even though Haaland's scored in a bag full of goals, they've not actually scored more than they do in the regular season.
No.
And generally, it's better to have the goals spread out through the team.
Yeah.
Any team, if you ask, sort of
look at Arsenal.
You spread the goals out. Liverpool, teams pass, spread the goals out among a front three that were like, if one was dropped off, the other one was there, pick up, and he'd have a storming of a game. Yeah. And that was the thing with previously. I mean, I'm not saying this Manchester City side is anybody. I think they will turn it around. They could go on a run tomorrow, and then
hopefully it doesn't start next week.
Yeah, not for you, Billy. But like, when the goals were spread out, like Man City could play. And it really didn't matter if one player wasn't firing or two players weren't firing because there was another player coming off the bench or there'd be someone else having a stormer.
They're used to that. All right, David Silva's there. All right, Aguero's there. All right, Mahrez is there. All right, Sterling's there. All right, De Bruyne's there.
Leroy Sané.
Sané. Gundogan.
Ferran Torres.
They've always had players that are there to pick the team up, essentially. And it just doesn't feel like they have that at the minute. I mean,
because they're all on the bench.
Yeah. Very good point. Or in the stands, or on loan at Bayern Munich.
You know, I bet Sani's there. He just welcomes Cancelo. I was like, fuck that bald fraud. Come here. You'll win everything here.
Champions League.
Yes.
You'll win it.
Especially now.
You won't have a manager overthinking. It's brilliant. You play like you do in the league, in the Champions League, and you still win.
You want to play with Super Moting and still win?
Disrespectful. Anyway, Billy, are we going to finish up with some FPL stuff?
Yeah, mate, can do. How have you boys got on? Because I'm on 61 points with Fernandes and Rashford still to play. Rashford captain too, by the way.
I am on 69 points with Shaw, Rashford and Fernandes still to play.
Healthy.
I'm on 64 points. Also with Shaw, Rashford and Fernandes still to play, but I've captained Rashford as well.
I have captained Rashford as well. Should we have a look at Jake's?
God, where is he? I couldn't be bothered to look that far down. You didn't put it in the chat, so.
Where are you?
Let's go.
130th,
43 points with just Fernandes to play.
He's the only person in the league that's had a grey arrow. He's stayed in the league. He's not gone up. He's not gone down.
I think he's been 130th for like six game weeks in a row.
Just can't crack that top 120. Oh, bless him.
Yeah. I mean, he keeps picking decent teams as well. Like, it's not a bad team he's picked there.
He hasn't got a bad team. Like, he's just benching players on his bench, doesn't he?
Yeah. Mm. If he's,
how many points is on his bench?
I know he's got. I don't have it up.
Jensen with 8, Kilman with 11, Nico Williams with 5.
Yeah. I've got to feel sorry for the lad. At least the Adam Buemo, that's one positive.
I mean, if he doesn't, say that's Tony instead of Buemo, he's in real trouble there. Yeah, I couldn't believe the bloody fucking 3 Brentford goals yesterday. Not one Tony involvement. Outrageous, boys. Outrageous.
Incredible.
Anyway. I don't think this game week's been too bad, to be fair. Obviously, Arsenal disappointed this game week. Newcastle didn't keep a clean sheet either, which is annoying. So I started Nick Pope thinking Newcastle would keep a clean sheet, and obviously David Reyes kept a clean sheet and he's on my bench. 7
Yeah, I've got Kepa on the bench with 10 points. If I've got 10 points in my starting 11, I'm really having a storm out of the week there.
I'm a little bit annoyed I didn't triple captain Rashford as well. I feel like I feel like I should have done.
I wasted it on Haaland.
I mean, you did the same game week, didn't we, Billy?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, I'd rather not talk about that, to be honest with you, because it's very depressing.
Matoma came through for me. 11 points.
He's someone that I really want to be able to put in my team, but I just don't have space for him.
Oh, I rate him. I rate him.
I don't think I want to really make any transfers because my team is so solid. Like I do struggle to pick 11. Like every week, and I have to leave someone on the bench who I don't want to leave on the bench, like Almiron, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also capable of like a blank game week like he has this week.
Mm-hmm.
He's not been half
the player since he came back from the World Cup.
No, he hasn't. That's the thing. But I don't know. I still don't want to take him out. It's that kind of Wilfred Zaha kind of attitude, isn't it? Where as soon as you drop him, he scores. So I finally got rid of him this season.
I've completely changed
my weeks of nothing.
My philosophy, so since I'll just pick the players that I actually like in real life and just hope they do well. And that's what I've been doing. And it's been working. I've not blanked since I've started doing that.
Fair enough.
And I've not hit the I've not been below average since I started doing that. Like I'm a Toma. £3 million. Ridiculous. Ridiculous. He's ready to, you know what I mean? Playing the Premier League. And even Deserby, watched his post-match, and he said, I just can't substitute Matoma because I always feel like he's got a goal or an assist in him.
Yeah.
I was like, that's what I like to hear.
That is the sort of player that you need.
Yeah. And your FPL team, he's like, I don't sub this guy. you know he's getting you know he's nailed on.
He's such a tricky little player. And I mean, that goal he scored against Liverpool, though.
Yeah,
like in the last minute, just to flick it over, and then to some players will try and let that drop and take it on their stronger or weak foot or whatever. He's just up there, Bosch. Like, no fanny about.
That's like a foot soul.
The technique
goal,
of it.
The
technique of that sort of goal shows me that it's not. This isn't just a guy in a being a good form. He's a player.
He's a player.
You know. It'd be interesting
to see if he goes somewhere in the summer. So it's a real tough one for Brighton because he's got to have people looking at him for sure.
Brighton could make fucking £300 million on players in the summer.
Brighton could fully cash in on like half their
and that's just to Chelsea. That's just to Chelsea
for one player.
£3 million you bought him for. I'll give you £300 million and Obama Yang.
Yeah, I'll add the £300 million.
Zerbi's just like, I'll just 300's fine. Just keep Obama Yang.
Fine, we'll give you £500 million and throw Danny Welbeck in. We'll give him a 40-year contract.
Has there never been a player that's less of a Potter player than fucking Pierre-Emerick Obama Yang?
Oh man!
Is it ever actually like a
he'll be gone? He'll be out the door as soon as Potter.
He took a bit of Champions League squad.
That's so funny. Yeah, he'll end up at Forest.
He'll end up at Forest.
That stands every chance.
Three-time Champions League winner. I tell you what, I never thought I'd see Scott McKenna in a side with Keylor Navas. Never thought I'd see that. No. Did not see that coming. If you'd have told me that like 3 years ago or something, that Scott McKenna would be playing with Keylor Navas, I'd be like, did Keylor Navas lose a hand? Or some sort of horrible accident.
PSG just hired his dad.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's fair play. Clean sheet on a debut. A few good saves.
Yeah. He had a really good game today.
He had the game that you'd probably expect from a three-time Champions League winning keeper. That is now, South obviously, a little bit older.
Times as well. I wonder how many games he's played for a keeper.
He's gone from playing with Lionel Messi to playing with Jesse Lingard.
I don't see the difference.
Oh, you'd be gutted though, wouldn't you? You would. You'd be like, oh yeah, you got Neymar, Mbappe, Messi. Oh no, I'm what?
So your agent calls you on deadline day. Look, I've got Nottingham Forest are interested in you, but I'm playing with Messi. Like, don't make this happen.
Yeah. What have I done to deserve this? Yeah. I've been a professional my whole career.
Chris Wood, Kylian Mbappe.
Again, don't see the difference. Anyway, thank you, Will. Finish up there. Thank you very much for joining me, boys.
Pleasure as always, mate.
Thank you very much for the listeners for tuning in. We shall be back at some point, as we are very inconsistent these days, but hang around. See you, bye. Sports Social Podcast Network.